Pitful Ewan is the pinch hitter who never misses. He's 9 for 9 now on BizNews conferences. The only person who has presented at every single conference. And I think that would give you a feeling or an appreciation of the esteem with which I hold him, not just as for his wisdom and what he shares, but as a human being as well. He's a legend in South African asset management. A few years ago, we had this debate going on about local is lekker and offshore is better. And one of our tribe members said he's sick of this. Here's R1 million. Give 500,000 to Pitt. Give 500,000 to Magnus. And let the two of them see who does best for me. So far, Pitt, you go cantering in front. It's like, you know, those who know horse racing, it's hands and heels. But Magnus is making a very determined run towards the end, and we've got a year and a bit to go. Magnus says he was left in the starting stalls because once he put his money in, the markets collapsed. But even so, Pitt's hands and heels. Anyway, when he speaks, the market listens. He's synonymous with deep value investing in South Africa. And while he's one of the most respected figures in the investment world, he didn't start his career managing money. His first job was as a lecturer at the University of Pretoria, and he followed that by a stint as an economic analyst at the South African Reserve Bank. It was only after this grounding in academia and central banking that he moved to Allan Gray in 1991. After that, Investec Asset Management, and that's where we met. Phew, it's a long time ago. And he then focused his attention on value investing and the value fund that John Bickard runs. He started it. Pitt then started ReCM, his own company. I still remember when you founded that. I mean, I really teased you. I had a radio show those days about, you know, what's this, you know, ReCM, what does it really stand for? And of course, he had to explain it in very, he had to unpack it in a way that even a thick oak would understand it. And I did eventually. He now manages the Merchant West Value Fund. He's made a huge impact in South Africa, though. He brought Bob Caldini to South Africa. I'll never forget that. Those of you who are in sales or want to understand the human psyche, Charlie Munger says the book to read is called Influence by Robert Caldini. And that came from one of the Berkshire Hathaway AGM, where he was asked every year at the Berkshire Hathaway AGM, which again was one of the areas that Pitt drove a lot of thinking in South Africa by taking people over there. Every year, he or Warren Buffett would suggest a book. And I remember the one year it was Robert Caldini, and I came back. It was a long way, very difficult to find. In fact, well, it was there at the AGM. I bought it, brought it back, very difficult to find it elsewhere. And I read it, and I, jeepers, this really changed my mind on a lot of things. And it so helped me. Pitt brings him out to South Africa to come and talk to us. That's the kind of guy he is. His path from lecturing students to analyzing the national economy and only then to the stock market has given him a unique and deeply principled foundation that has defined his powerful contrarian philosophy ever since. It's a principled stand that he also has taken into the wider community. He's a director of Sakalicha. Those of you who know Sakalicha know the incredible work that the Pitt LaRue and Russell Lamberti and the team there are doing. Please give a warm welcome to a man who took the scenic route to investment stardom, Pitt Fullion.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, a multi-award-winning, truly independent boutique wealth manager. Invest better with Brenthurst.
So good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And again, thank you for the opportunity to present at the 9th conference, second investment conference. Today, I can see that many of you sitting in this room have a problem. And your problem is that you've accumulated some level of wealth through applying your skills in the real world, not the financial world, the real world. But now you need to look after that wealth. And you need to ensure it retains its purchasing power over time, preferably, of course, in hard currency terms. But trying to do this makes many people nervous. Do I buy equity, onshore or offshore? How much? What if markets crash? What if the politicians steal all our money? Should I buy bonds? What are bonds? Offshore or onshore? How much? What if the US goes through hyperinflation? Should I buy gold? How do I buy gold? What about Bitcoin? And so on. So today I want to present you with a solution. And the solution is a cockroach. Most people would not imagine a cockroach to be a solution to any kind of problem. But if your aim is to survive and thrive over time, no matter what the circumstances, the cockroach is exactly what you should try and emulate. But how does this work? Before I get to that, I'm going to tell you a bit of a personal story, a bit of history, how I came to invest like a cockroach. When I started Recium in 2003, the first fund I launched was the Worldwide Flexible Fund, because I believe that investors needed a globally diversified portfolio. But I wasn't very imaginative, and to compound matters, I believed that I was smart at the time. Smart enough to see around corners, and simultaneously, I was also dumb enough to think that the fund should just like look very similar to the competition's funds, you know, just better. And to be better, I would just analyze harder and forecast better. After all, that's what I grew up believing a portfolio manager does. Analyze harder than others and forecast better. My assumptions proved costly. A 60-40 equity bond portfolio, which looks like all the competitors' portfolios, with 25% then, now 40% offshore exposure, just didn't cut it. Initially, it went well. The first decade went fantastically well. With the benefit of hindsight, of course, I was just being lucky. Eventually, my luck ran out and my performance started regressing to the mean, as it invariably does. And then I ran into some bad luck and my performance really got bad. And by the COVID panic-induced crash of 2020, the fund's performance was shocking and I was ashamed. It was time for change. But before I examine the changes I made, let's just establish some investing facts first, some investing facts that I have discovered firsthand through practical experience. First of all, we need to accept that we do not know anything about anything, especially the future. As Mungus subquoted Socrates, the dawning of wisdom is when we realize that we don't know anything. Now, to fill this void, of course, market practitioners such as myself up until 2020 developed elaborate measures of risk, because risk is measurable and quantifiable. For instance, if you walk into a casino and you want to play the craps game, you know, the game where you throw the two dice on the table, you can exactly quantify your risk of losing money on the first throw when you throw craps, which is the 2, the 3, and the 12. 2 you can throw one way, that's 2 ones. 3 you can throw with a 2 and a 1 on the dice, or a 1 and a 2. And a 12, one way, that's 2 sixes. So there's 4 ways to throw craps out of 36 possible combinations. That is 11.1% chance of losing your money on the first throw. That's it. You can exactly identify your risk. Markets do not work that way. I mean, what is the risk of the market going down 20% tomorrow? No one knows. You can't quantify it. In markets, we live in an uncertain world, not a risky world. Uncertainty is unquantifiable, nor is it measurable, despite the financial industry's best efforts to put numbers on these things. Standard measurements of market risk are simply extrapolations of what has happened in the past. Here's a good example. During the Second World War in some of these Pacific islands, the U.S. had some Air Force bases. And to supply these bases, they used to fly over and drop cargo on the islands. And sometimes the cargo would miss their target and fall into the village of the local population. And of course, the car was filled with food and drink, which they used to supply the stations with. And the villagers were overjoyed to get this cargo falling out the sky. And then at the end of the war, of course, the station was closed down. All the soldiers left. And the villagers noticed that they weren't getting any more cargo being dropped on them. And they started building airplanes and airstrips and air towers out of bamboo and other materials that they had at hand on the island, hoping that the past would reoccur without any knowledge of how it worked or any technological knowledge. That is what financial risk management is. It's cargo cult science. It's extrapolation of the past, hoping for the same outcome. Robin Williams, you know, the comedian, he was a genius who understood the world works, who understood how the world works much better than most of us. But he was also a terrible student. In one of his economics papers, the full extent of his answer was, "I don't know, sir." He obviously failed the exam, but if you ask me, his answer contained the highest level of economic wisdom. But this is now overwhelming. We don't know anything. And even the things we think we know about are fraught with uncertainty and can't be measured properly. What to do? Okay, let's focus on three things that we actually know, that we know are a fact. The first thing is long-term returns come from staying in the game. Over the past 100 years, the S&P 500 has returned 10.5% per annum. That's almost 7% above US inflation. 7% real terms. You can compound at 7% real terms over 100 years, you will be a wealthy person. That's an outstanding return. And that was achieved despite two major world wars, a Great Depression, market crashes in 1929, 1973, 1987, 2000, 2008, 2020. If you had taken your money out every time there was some uncertainty in the market and only put it back when it was safe to be back in the market, you would have not even come close to that 10.5% return. And the same goes with Africa. Over the same period, South Africa has compounded at 14% per annum in rand terms, or also about 7% in real terms. But if you had taken your money out every time there was a Sharpeville massacre or a assassination of Verwoerd or an oil crisis in the 70s or when we defaulted on our debt in the 80s or the market crashes of 87, 98, 2008, 2020, if you had taken the money out then when it was uncertain, you would not have received that return. Morgan Housel said it best when he said, "Average returns compounded for above average periods lead to extraordinary returns." So that's fact number one. Fact number two was given to us by Harry Markowitz, who was a student of the markets. He said, "Diversification is one of the few free lunches in finance. You can have lower risk with high returns if you combine assets that are negatively correlated with each other." I won't go into the maths, but that is how it works. Of course, the corollary to that is, if there is no asset in your portfolio that is causing you discomfort, then you are not properly diversified. Think about that. That's the second point, diversification. Third point, all else being equal, the more volatile a sequence of returns, the worse the compound returns will be over time. In the Yosemite National Park in the US, there's a mountain called the Half Dome, which is a favorite of the mountain climbers. It's like, if you can imagine, it's got a dome shaped at the back and a vertical face in the front. Now, you can get to the summit in one of two ways. You can climb up the vertical face, which will take you 3 days. And let's say you expend 700 calories an hour. You climb for 8 hours a day over 3 days. That's roughly 15 to 18,000 calories. Or you can walk up the back way. It takes you 12 hours, 500 calories an hour hiking. 12 hours is 6,000 calories, almost a third of the calories you require to climb up the face. You get to the same point, but you use a lot less energy, and it's a lot less risky. In order to achieve our investment goals, we prefer to walk up the back way. To relate this to investing, the energy you spend going up and down a mountain is volatility. If you instead use that same energy to walk along a horizontal road, you will go a lot further, and that is compounding. To illustrate it further, think of two funds. Fund one does 30% in year one, and fund two does 10%. Very pedestrian. Year two, this first fund does 30% again. Now it's advertising all over the airports, and the DFMs think this fund manager is the best thing since, well, the previous best fund manager. And fund two is still only trundling along at 10%. Year three comes around, and all the client money is in this first fund, and it goes down 30%. Remember, to get big returns, you're taking big risks. That's how life works. And that works both ways. So fund three is down 30%, and fund two is still chugging along at 10%. The wallflower at the party, nobody's interested. Now, it looks like they've both gotten to the summit. They've achieved 30%. 30 plus 30 minus 30, 30. 10 plus 10 plus 10 is 30. Looks like they've both gotten to the summit, but if you understand compounding, it's not additive, it's multiplicative. Fund one, which is 30 plus 30, 30 times 30 times minus 30, only compounded at 5.8% per annum. Whereas fund two compounded at 10% per annum. And over a long period of time, if you build up that difference, it makes a huge difference. So how can we use these three certainties, which I've just identified, in our investment approach? Well, let's just remind ourselves of our goals. What are we trying to do? Number one, we want our assets to grow by more than inflation in hard currency terms so we can maintain the purchasing power of our wealth over time. That's goal number one. And goal number two, and this is an important goal, our assets need to be in liquid form so that if an emergency hits us, we can access them. So not locked away in some sort of structure. And we need to achieve these things knowing that the stats that financial market practitioners roll out are not going to help us. And even if we could calculate it, we know that we can't get the prospect of average return of the market. If the market can go up 50%, down 50%, in other words, the expected return is zero, you're not going to get zero. You're either going to get 50% or you're going to get minus 50%. Another way to think about that is if I offer you R1 million to play Russian roulette, your expected return is 5 out of 6 times you're going to win R1 million. 83% chance of winning R1 million. That's 830,000 rand. That's the expected return from playing Russian roulette. That sounds fantastic. Except if you are the sixth player. So, in setting our investment goals, none of us can ever afford to be that sixth player, even though the expected return sounds quite attractive. So what you want to own is not necessarily the best asset, i.e. the asset with the highest expected return over time. You want to own the best combination of assets. In other words, the combination that preserves your capital during bad times and grows it during good times. The combination of assets that avoids large drawdowns. How do we do this? Fortunately, there's a research outfit called Gavicol who's helped us in this regard. They've come up with something called the four quadrant approach. If you can imagine the horizontal axis, economic growth, high growth, recession, and the vertical axis, inflation, high inflation, deflation. There's four quadrants here. Above the vertical line, in an inflationary environment, you can get an inflationary bust. In that sort of environment, cash is a very useful asset. Or an anti-fragile asset. An asset can benefit from things going wrong. That can benefit from high volatility. Such an asset could be gold. It could be a short position in stocks. It could be a position that's effectively long volatility, such as options. But you want anti-fragile assets. In the quadrant, which represents an inflationary boom, you generally want assets that are sensitive to price movements, like commodity stocks. Or assets that are contrarian. Whereas if everyone is buying American stocks, maybe you want to own Chinese stocks. If everybody is buying value stocks, maybe you want to own growth stocks. Something different in the inflationary boom environment. Below the horizontal line, in the deflationary environment, you can get a deflationary boom or a deflationary bust. In a deflationary bust, cash is a great asset to own. And bonds can be anti-fragile. They can benefit from that sort of disorder in that environment. And in a boom, in a deflationary boom, you want to own stocks that are sensitive to volume growth, tech stocks, growth stocks, that sort of thing. So now we've got our four quadrants. We know what sort of assets we need for each quadrant. So it's very simple. All we need to do is to predict in which quadrant we're going to be going forward. Simple, isn't it? But that's not the right answer. Remember, the cockroach survives not because it's smart and can forecast, but because it's dumb and robust to any particular outcome. So what we need to do is not predict, but as Howard Marks said, we need to prepare for any eventuality. And how do we prepare? By building a portfolio that has equal exposure to all four quadrants, because we don't know what the future holds. We want cash, which is deferred purchasing power. We want bonds, which are contractual assets. We want equity, which are growth or fragile assets. And we want hard assets like gold, which are anti-fragile. And we want equal allocation to each one of these. And so doing, we'll have a mix of assets in our portfolio that can survive a catastrophe and grow in times of good. Very importantly, such a portfolio plays defense very well. And if you look at the stats from the previous World Cup, the teams that won the semifinals and the final were the teams that tackled the most, had the least possession, and kicked the most. In other words, the best defensive teams won the championship. What we want to do with our assets is we want to win the wealth building and wealth growth championship. Not each and every game as it plays out over weeks and months and years. We want to win that championship at the end of the day. And to do so, you need to be able to play defense. So, as someone famously said to a portfolio manager who was pontificating on what he thought the client should be doing, this is what I'm doing right now, don't tell me what you think, tell me what's in your portfolio. So this is what is in the Cockroach portfolio, the Merchant West Investments Worldwide Flexible Portfolio today. It has 25% cash, predominantly dollars, because I think of this fund as a dollar-denominated fund, with some Japanese yen, which is the most undervalued currency in the world, and some a little bit rand for liquidity purposes. It has 25% bonds, all emerging market bonds, no developed market bonds, predominantly South African government bonds, which I think is the best bond investment in the world, but emerging market bonds. 25% equity, and the equity portion of the fund, I'm building what I term 10 stocks forever, because my theory is that every time you make an investment decision, you increase the odds of getting something wrong. So you want to make as few decisions as possible. So I've gone through a process of identifying 10 stocks that I can hold forever. Such stocks need to be large global businesses. They need to be high quality businesses, high returns on equity, high margins. They need to have been around for over 50 years or at least 50 years to take advantage of the Lindy effect. They need to have a strong, inherent, identifiably strong culture in the business, a culture of custodianship and value creation. And they also need to have very low or no debt levels so they're not financially insecure. And I've been building this portfolio over the past 18 months. So far, I've got in it Nestle, Estee Lauder, London Stock Exchange Group, Berkshire Hathaway, and Walt Disney. The stocks I haven't bought yet because the valuation is not in line yet, and I've no doubt over the next 2 years or so they will get in line, so I'll get a chance to buy them, are Hermes, Nintendo, Amazon, Microsoft, and Investor AB. Those are my 10 stocks that I intend to hold for a very long time and not make any decision based on short-term fluctuations in the market. And finally, 25% of the fund is in hard assets, primarily gold, almost 15% in gold, but there is some energy exposure, increasing energy exposure, and exposures to physical land, to Bitcoin, and to platinum. So as you can see, this is a highly diversified portfolio. In fact, I would even call it aggressively diversified. What returns should you expect from such a portfolio? Well, cash should give you inflation plus a bit, say 1%. Bonds historically have given you inflation plus 2. Equities have given you inflation plus 4 to 6. And hard assets like gold have given you inflation plus 4 to 8, roughly, depending on when you measure it. If you put all that together, the portfolio should give you inflation plus 4 in dollar terms. So I changed the investment process of the Worldwide Flexible Fund 5 years ago. So it just so happens we've got a 5-year track record now. What has the fund done? Well, in rands, it's done 9.7% per annum over that period, 5% above local inflation. In dollar terms, which is the way I prefer to think about it, it has done 8.8%, around 4.5% higher than US inflation. So it has done exactly what you would have expected it to do, which I think is a good outcome. Importantly, and this is key, it has done so with low volatility. Second lowest volatility out of 89 funds in the sector. Low downside risk, second lowest out of 89 funds in the sector. And high Sharpe and Sortino ratios, which are just measurements of return generated for risk taken. Maintaining low volatility in the fund price, in other words, the fund price doesn't jump around by big jumps, keeps investors in the fund. It's those big jumps that scare investors out of the fund, which interrupts long-term compounding. So that's an important part of managing the fund. Okay, to summarize, to finish off, I see my time is up. To summarize, what is the cockroach all about? It's simple. You can do it yourself if you want to. It's liquid. You can always access your funds quickly when needed. There's nothing locked up in this fund. There's no illiquid stuff. It doesn't require any forecasting. It doesn't require a genius fund manager. Its low volatility provides us with low stress levels, keeping us in the game, importantly. The fund gets rebalanced every 3 to 6 months, and that uses the cash to buy assets that have gone down, which is what many investors find very hard to do when assets go down, to buy them then. So it is automatically buying low. And finally, it maintains and grows the real value of your hard-earned asset base in hard currency terms, in spite of anything the politicians can throw at us. Thank you.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, the leader in offshore investing, connecting South Africa to opportunities worldwide. Invest better with Brenthurst.